Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to Death Talker Unscripted. I'm your host, Paula, and I'm a Death Walker. And this week I'm started out with a subject, and I got two episodes recorded for this episode. And I was listening to them, and about an hour later, I decided to whitewash the whole thing and start again because the universe called me to do this subject instead. As some as you know, I do death talks in person, twice a month in my local area. And I usually have somewhere between probably 50 and 100 people who attend. The age groups on that, they vary. They can go as young as 30 and as high as 88. The vast majority of them are the baby boomers or the next generation that is going to be heading into that retirement, getting ready to have that last quarter when death does arrive. So that's kind of a gist, and we have different topics all the time. So, anyways, this time for this episode, I started thinking about the most recent death talk that I did, which was on Tuesday, as a matter of fact. And this is what I took away from it, and this is how that one developed into this episode. So tonight's topic is baby boomers aren't quietly going into the night. Baby boomers have now reached a point where they're not just simply satisfied with rolling over and dying in a hospice somewhere on a floor in the hospital where maybe somebody might come see them. Maybe there might be enough nurses to take care of it. They're also finding that hospice as home is not something they'd like. It's not an option either. They are now feeling the pressure of the ultimatum, having two ways to go, but they are both very evil. So, what's that saying that we Americans do, the lesser of two evils? So, a lot of people tend to use the home hospice. For some reason, they think it's a kinder and a softer and a more gentle place. On many, as a death doula, on many lines, I can see how you all see that. And it's not too far from the truth, but it's just the top layer that you're seeing. And what lies underneath is just a turmoil of trauma. And there's guilt from the dying person because they're putting all their people in this situation. And there's shame because a lot of the caregivers and the family members, they are not equipped to handle with it. So they feel shameful that they're not able to properly address their dying one. And so all these underlying issues make home hospice seem like a very kind and gentle way, but in truth, it's just a snake pit of trouble that's going to lead to more trauma. The grief process is so much longer, in my opinion. So, and when I say home hospice is not necessarily evil, it's just a little barbaric still. And the reason I say this is because, yes, it's your dying, it is your dying loved one. And yes, whether I clear my whole house out for someone so that they can have the entire house to die in, that is just a top layer. That is a given. Most of us are good human beings, and we will give and give and give almost to the point where it will tear us up and eat us alive inside. I know this because I've been a caregiver for many, many people in my family. And each time I'm a caregiver, it eats a little bit of my soul. It takes a little bit of me away. I lose a little bit of part of me. But I do it because it's in my innate nature to do it. And there are so many people allotted in this time and place that have that gift to do it. And there are many others who have no clue. It's just not in their personality. It's not in their natural DNA. And when you get these people, now they're shamed and they're guilted into bringing the loved one to their home, and they have no clue how to caregive. It's just not in their DNA, but they'll do it, and they'll do it out of duty, and they'll do it out of family obligation. And none of this is horrible. What I'm saying is it doesn't bring a picture of a very calming and peaceful way to die. It seems like there's a lot of chaos and there's a lot of trauma. And the way that the body starts to fall apart the longer that it sits in hospice. And then there's the scientific side, the smells, the fluids, the way the body starts deteriorating, the way the mind starts going. It's just not your person anymore sitting in that bed. It's really just an empty shell. And it just hasn't quite shut off yet. So all these vibrations and frequencies and energies are flowing through this house. And while everybody is doing their very best to be kind and compassionate and care for their loved one out of some sort of duty, baby boomers today are thinking, yeah, that doesn't sound like a really cool thing that I would like to do. I took care of my mother doing that. I took care of my grandmother doing that. I took care of my friends doing that. My husband, I have seen the outcome of that. I have felt the long-term trauma. I have felt the long-term, in some cases, resentment towards that person even dying. A lot of caregivers lose their health. And because they're so busy caring for the loved one, that now they have fallen into a pit, so to speak, and it becomes harder and harder to separate the caregiver from the individual. So a lot of times caregivers actually end up dying before the dying patient. So the caregivers are what the baby boomers have already done. They have been doing it for a while. And now they see things are changing. They're seeing that this is the same old thing, but now their children may have to step up and do it. And in this day and time with inflation and rent prices and trying to buy a house and keeping up with a car and making sure your children go to a decent school, they are realizing that it's not going to be easy for them to be a caregiver, period. Excuse me, I'm so sorry. We have allergies here and it's really kicking me. But anyways, like I was saying, the baby boomers are realizing that the children that would have to, the people that would have to step up and take care of them through this thing are not as financially stable as they perhaps were doing it for their mom. Society has changed and altered. There is so much demand on work, 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 because you have to pay the bills, that who's going to take care of the loved one? So the baby boomers see that, you know, okay, I can have one of my daughters or my son step up and do it, but they may have to lose their income. If their household loses an income, what's that going to happen to them? I don't want to be the person that makes their life fall apart, whether I'm dying or not. And the other side of it is they're thinking, well, my children would just, you know, there's homes that I could go to. There's nursing facilities, living facilities. There's wonderful places where, you know, 55 and plus communities where it's all taken care of. There's, you know, fun and games and stuff like that. But again, the cost of this, and a lot of baby boomers are understanding that they spent a lot of money caring for their family members, their mom, their dad, their grandma, that their retirement isn't quite what they expected they would have to spend on nursing care. Nursing care in this country is off the charts. I'm working with a client right now and, you know, he's paying $7,500 a month and he's a retired colonel in the United States Army. And the truth of the matter is the VA didn't have a place on their facility for him. So they outsourced. And in outsourcing, it's eating his finances alive. So again, the baby boomers are looking around going, this is not a good way to die. This is not how I want to die. I've done all this stuff in my life. I have taken care of people. I have played the game of buying a house and being a good consumer. And I've done everything that is expected of me. And now that I'm dying, this is all you're going to offer me? So they're looking for other ways. And there's just no other way to say that. Like I said, in the talks that I have, a lot of people say, what are my options for death? Really depends on what part of the country you live in. If you happen to live in the bluer states, they're a lot more kinder, compassionate, and they have progressed with the death movement. They are open-minded to several kind of things. If you're still somewhere down in the Red Belt, Bible Belt, Red State area, you got two choices. And that's just the bottom line. And I've already discussed what those are. They asked me things like, how hard is it to take a gun? And could I just walk out to my pasture or walk out to my backyard? And the only thing they say on that is they don't want their family to clean up the mess. They don't want that huge mess thing. Other people have asked me what's a certain amount of plants and flowers they could take and how much of it should they take and what are the effects and how will it be perceived in their body? How will the body take it? What do they need to look for? As an herbalist, there are poisonous plants everywhere. There are poisonous flowers everywhere. And I try to tell them, it's not as simple as just going outside and sucking down some berries and you're going to die. Death is not pretty. Death has ugliness to it, but so does life. So does birth. It's not all roses and, you know, candy cane falling from the sky. So when they say they want an option for a good death, what they're looking for, they're not looking for easy. They're looking for less suffering. They're looking for an option before their body starts to break down and smell and they leak and pee and drool and poop all over everything. They don't want that humiliation. They don't want that to feel and be in that situation. And can you blame them? I don't want to do anything. So they constantly bring up their own version of options. As a death walker and an advocate of death, I tell them all those ways are viable. Every single solitary one of them will get you dead. And you won't have to do hospice in the hospital, and you won't have to do hospice at home, and you won't have to be in a living care facility or an Alzheimer's home or whatever else that goes on down the line. Those are all very viable options. And I make no bones about it. So what if the options, and then I have people who say, what if those options of the hospice don't work for me? What can I do? You're a free citizen. You can do anything within the bounds of what you deem responsible. If you are already in the dying stage, doing harm to yourself is irrelevant at this particular juncture because your meat suit, your bio-organic onesie that you have lived in your entire life is dying. It's unsustainable. So all that's really left is that essence, that spirit. So many of us don't want that spirit or that essence to be contaminated with the bioorganic onesie that is now starting to break down and decompose and leak and, you know, all the things that I spoke of it before. So, again, we're back to, I want to choose to die before any of that happens, before I get to that point. Now, a lot of the states have a 6-month or less terminal illness deal. By law, I must tell you all these things are correct. When you get to the point of where a lot of us baby boomers are now, of thinking about how we're going to die, we don't want to make a mess. We really don't. We don't want to make a mess of our families who have to step up and create all kinds of chaos in their lives. We understand that families will make sacrifices, and they will make sacrifices. Even if I choose to have another option other than hospice go, you're going to sacrifice because I'm going to ask people to come together and give me a wake or a party. You're going to sacrifice some time so that you can spend with me. You're going to sacrifice some extra working days, or maybe you're going to sacrifice the kids going to school a little bit so they can spend time with their grandma and grandpa before they die. And so there's all kinds of ways that this moves into a very, very viable option. And is it going to take away the grief or the loss? Of course not. But it will alleviate a lot of the burden, stress, and extra trauma that comes along with it. And can you imagine a person who gets to make that decision? Can you imagine what that quality of the very last of their life is going to be really about? And isn't that what it is about? The quality of life. I want the very best quality of life, even in my death. And I don't think that is too much for us baby boomers to ask. The number one thing that gets brought up into almost every one of my death talks is euthanasia. That's an option, and I'm a big fan of it. That's a whole nother podcast, so I will go into that at a later date, probably the next one. I'm going to start breaking down the other options that I haven't gone into in this particular podcast. But this podcast was mainly for me to see how absolutely frustrating an entire generation is as they look to their deaths. The healthcare system is breaking down each and every day. Costs are rising in all forms. Inflation has just like freaking jumped off the cliff and is in a free fall. And the other thing is we are a very large population and we are coming to the end of our lives. And it just isn't sustainable for the system that we have in place right now as it's falling and crumbling apart. We don't see how it's going to be stable enough to handle each and every one of us dying. So here we are. They come to my death doula class or my death talk class, and we sit and we talk. Do I have any viable answers? Yes. Do I have any good ideas? Yes. Do I think we have an opportunity here to really make this death movement move and shake and really just kind of, you know, wake up this whole entire population of people who live in this country? Death is coming regardless. Regardless, whether you get old, whether you get hit by a bus, whether you get shot with a gun, whether you live in a country and they're genociding your people, death is here to stay. It's not going anywhere. And the fact that we can find all these brutal, nasty, barbaric ways for death to occur, we as a society here in America can't find a kinder, gentler way to let their people die. We can't find a way to let them express how they would want to die, and not only express it, but not be judged or ridiculed about being not of sound mind, or maybe we're too depressed or whatever. give us some credit. We're not all drooling fools sitting in diapers yet. Most of us are damn straight, skippy forward about how we see our deaths. We just haven't figured out to put it in how we're going to do it within the constraints of American culture, American religion, American laws. And so it makes it very hard. It's kind of like taking a square peg and shoving it into a round hole. It's like when you now vote, you don't really get to vote for the best man. You vote for the lesser of two evils. And that's what death is, more or less. You have two options. They're ultimatums, this way or that way, for now. And again, I am speaking from the location that I am. There are other options out there, and I will go into them. I spoke about the progressive blue states versus the red states. And I will talk about how the blue states are absolutely opening up the movement. And I will go into how you can make some of these options work for you, especially if you happen to be in the states that are closed-minded and have no intention of changing the pattern of suffering and draining financial, you know, draining the finances of the families and stuff. Death is a big business. So I guess for me, this is what I get for most of my death talks. Most people are looking for a good place and a good day to die. That's it. We would like to leave this planet, this time and space, which we have been graced and allowed to be here. We would like to leave it on our own terms. And we would like not to be judged or written off as certifiable or any of those things that society automatically. We have gotten us this far. It's 77 years of age. I think we can take the last step to make it out of here on our own. So that's about all I got. I'm going to ask y'all if you have comments or anything. My one question for you is, how would you want to die? Write it in the comments below. Tell me, if it weren't for laws and restraints and everything out there, how would you like to die? What would be a good place and a good day to die? Thank you guys so much. It's been great. I'll catch you next time. Keep talking death, death, death. It's brilliant. It's beautiful. And we just have to figure out how to fit it into that perspective. We have to open our minds enough up to make everyone see that it is just as important as life. Life can't happen without death, and death can't happen with life. They go hand in hand. And when you have two hands holding each other, it's a pretty brilliant, beautiful thing. So thanks again.